Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, Imports Domestics Microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the Pickle Bar, led by the Barrels and the Dills, indeed second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. And don't forget about Brewers Outlet gift cards. Right? Brewers Outlet gift cards, with this being the holiday season. James Franklin has agreed to a new six-year contract with Penn State. The contract runs through 2025. Terms were approved today by the Compensation Committee of the Penn State Board of Trustees. And while the financial terms were not yet released, it is a six-year deal that we can tell you. It's a new six-year contract. So it's not an extension of the current one. It's a full new six-year deal for him that runs through the 2025 season. And that was announced just a few minutes ago. All right, which is what we expected. All right, in the end, you know, Matt Lombardo referred to it yesterday. And look, I know we got Brad Edwards coming up, but you can't put a price on what he's been able to do here to bring it back the way he has. I mean, right now, Penn State is into one of those historical runs. Of winning 10 games three times in 4 years, 41 wins over the last 4 years. I mean, these are all numbers in the history of Penn State football that rank right up there. And he's been able to do it coming out of an era that Penn State didn't deserve, but he had to live through it and bring them back. All right, our play-by-play call of the day.
Punch set right, single to the left, Robinson. Snap. Out of the gun. Trubisky and the keeper left to the 15. Inside cut of the 10. 5. End zone. Touchdown Bears. Mitchell Trubisky. With 6 more. And the Bears explode to a 30-14 lead. 23 yards right down Michigan Avenue, baby.
They ran the Cowboys right out of Soldier Field last night. The Cowboys now are 6-7, yet still in first place in the division. Amazing. All right. He's one of the best in the business. There's a lot to talk about besides the new James Franklin six-year contract through the 2025 season. And we bring in Brad Edwards from ESPN. Brad, welcome back. It's really great to have you with us.
Thank you, Steve. I could use some good food right now. I'm late getting to lunch, and eventually I'll get there, but I would rather have whatever you're having.
That's exactly right. I never really felt going into the college football playoff. This, I usually just ask questions, but this will be, I'll start with opinion. I never really felt being the number one seed was a big deal in this thing until this year. And the reason I feel it's a big deal this year is because you want to avoid Clemson in the semifinal. Does that theory that I just put forward hold any water to you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, the way this thing is shaken out, there appears to be a big gap between the top three and then four through whatever it may be. So there is a distinct advantage. At least there seems to be in being the one seed this year. Who knows after those games play out whether we'll feel the same way. But based on what I've seen, yeah, I think you don't want to be the two seed and have to play Clemson. That's what you want to avoid. And look, the way that Ohio State has played, not just, you know, who they've beaten, but the way that they've done it, the dominance that they've really had from game one all the way through, has put LSU in a spot where I don't know that there's anything they can do in the SEC championship game that would open the door, you know, for them to move back to number one. I think it really would have to be some combination of LSU just absolutely blowing out Georgia and Ohio State barely squeaking by. That's about the only thing I could see that would flip those two. So I think the Buckeyes are in a pretty good position to be there as that number one seed and end up getting what most of us would think is a pretty advantageous draw.
It's been an interesting week for Dabo Swinney. He's had several statements in press conferences. Now, I think you and I both know have been around that part of these statements were to his team a motivator. And I'm talking to my team, not really talking to you. What when you look at the ACC, what kind of competition outside of that North Carolina game have they really even had?
None. And that includes the two SEC opponents they played out of conference. I mean, A&M is an okay team.
Yeah.
But if you hadn't already figured out that they're not great, well, you certainly saw that last week when they played LSU.
Right.
Truth is that they've played four really good teams, and five if you want to include Auburn. And the only one that they've really been competitive with is Georgia. And Georgia kind of plays a style that lends itself to that anyway. They kind of slow down the pace and allow teams to stay in the game a little bit longer than teams that play up tempo would. So I don't think Clemson's been tested. And if it wasn't for what they did last year, I would say this is a major concern going in. But they weren't really tested last year either. I mean, the ACC wasn't good a year ago. It wasn't quite as bad as it is this year. But you had the same type of thing where, you know, they didn't have a real non-conference test either, and they got to the playoff, and you could argue that they hadn't played anybody. And then they blew out Notre Dame, and they blew out Alabama. And so I can't sit here and try to make a big deal out of that and say, okay, as soon as they have to play someone, you know, LSU's been tested over and over and over. Clemson hasn't been, and so therefore advantage LSU. I saw it last year not matter that much, so it might not matter this year either.
Right, that's a good point. Other than conference label, what is the difference between Georgia and Utah? Now, we're going to find out everything in obviously 60 hours here as to how it's all going to play out. But in reality, on this day, what do you think the difference is between Georgia and Utah?
Well, I would say let's start with recruiting because that's the other thing outside of one is in the SEC and has a name brand. Georgia is obviously loaded with four and five star players. Utah's are much better than people realize. But for those who follow recruiting, and let's be honest, I mean, recruiting matters. I mean, having better players matters, and Georgia has better players. But I don't know that I can sit there and look at these teams right now the way they've been playing and say that, hey, Georgia's a lot better than Utah. It might not be that much of a difference between them. And even at quarterback, where we know that Jake Fromm is a guy who has all the tools, I think he's going to have a good NFL career. He's had a bad season because he has young, inexperienced receivers that he has really yet to get on the same page with. So he hasn't looked good in a lot of these games, but I don't think it's him. Meanwhile, most football fans around the country, I mean, let's take the college football diehards out of the equation. Most football fans couldn't tell you who Utah's starting quarterback is. They've never heard of Tyler Huntley. And yet, if you look at a lot of numbers that matter, Tyler Huntley is up there with the best in the country. And he's really come on. This is his senior year. He's a three-year starter. And up to this point, he's kind of what you would have labeled the dual threat guy. He's a very effective runner, was okay throwing the ball. But man, he has really turned it on as a passer, and he's really good with downfield accuracy. You know, deeper passes, really good passing under pressure. And if you look at our total QBR metric, the top six in the nation are Tua, Fields, Burrow, Hurts, Tyler Huntley, Trevor Lawrence. Okay, those are the top six, and the other five guys that are right there around him, they're going to get all the All-America honors here in the next few weeks when these teams start coming out. Tyler Huntley, though, has been every bit as important to his team as those guys, but people haven't heard of him, and so those are the types of differences between, you know, Georgia and Utah. It's a lot of it's about perception and the fact that so few people have even seen Utah play.
Which then brings me to one other position. I think a cut above the casual fan knows who DeAndre Swift is, who's a heck of a player.
Yep.
I think you asked that same cut above average fan about Moss at Utah.
Yeah.
And you and I have to explain to them how good the guy is.
Yeah, Zach Moss, I think, is going to have a very good NFL career. And he's been a really good college running back for a few years. And he's versatile, too. You know, he catches the ball well. He's not just a runner. And up to this year, I would have said he was the most important part of their offense. But like I said, Tyler Huntley has come on so much that it's no longer the Zach Moss show. I mean, they've got a quarterback who is more dangerous just because of the position he plays. He has the ball in his hands more often. And so the two of those guys together have made them a very dangerous offensive team, where they used to be, you know, Utah was always one of those run the ball, milk the clock, you know, dominate possession, play solid defense. And that was their MO, and they're still doing the running and the playing solid defense, if not great defense. And now they have the quarterback to go with it. And so they are, they're a much better team than people realize.
Ohio State, of course, will play Wisconsin Saturday night for the Big Ten championship. Wisconsin played them in Columbus, and Brad, when I was sitting there trying to get ready for the game, you're trying to pick out a tape that gives you the best read. And I picked out the Wisconsin tape. What really surprised me about the Wisconsin tape was the number of times in that game where Wisconsin, instead of going under center, which is part of their MO, went so often shotgun. Do you expect them to change up a bit? In other words, when I mean change up, go back to actually who they are instead of trying to do something that different?
Well, that's interesting. I'll have to look at that because I was not aware of the shotgun element of it. I was looking at, though, Jonathan Taylor and the lowest yards per rush he's had in a game in his career was that game against Ohio State this year.
Right.
And if you're trying to figure out why, well, it's actually pretty easy to figure out because there's another number that jumped out at me, which is also the lowest of his career, which is yards before contact. On
right.
20 carries in that game, he averaged 0.1 yards before contact. In other words, right. on average, he was getting hit at the line of scrimmage. Only 7 of his 20 carries did he actually get beyond the line of scrimmage before first contact was made. And he's not a great yards after contact runner anyway. That's not his game.
That's
right. So it really was as simple as Ohio State just dominated that mighty Wisconsin offensive line all game long. And the scary thing for Wisconsin is if you go back and you look at the 2 years ago Big Ten championship game, 2017, when these same two teams played,
yep.
The numbers for Jonathan Taylor are almost identical. I mean, the two times he's faced Ohio State, he has done nothing, and it's been the same story, which is that they just can't block those guys. So you look at that and you say, what could they possibly change? And you have made a point there, which is, okay, look, if they were not under center before, maybe they can try that. I don't know if that helps a lot as far as their ability to block. The only other thing I can think of, though, is to come out throwing and you know, throw on
right.
first down. Wisconsin, you know what kind of team they are. Everybody in the Big Ten knows what
right.
kind of team they are. They're
right.
they're 121st in the nation in first down pass rate. I mean, they don't like to throw on first down.
Right.
But I don't know what else they can try. I mean, and so I look at this game and I just don't see how Wisconsin's going to score. And this is a year where you're probably going to have to score in the 30s to have any chance to beat the Buckeyes.
For Taylor, by the way, two of the worst three games statistically in his career have been against Ohio State. To back that up, LSU Georgia. What can Georgia do against LSU, especially Joe Burrow, who obviously has had a Heisman-worthy season?
If you look at Georgia, the first thing that jumps out is their defense. Even though they don't have any All-America-type players, they don't have any household names. As a group, they've been dominant defensively this year. They have not yet allowed more than 17 points in regulation. Okay, the only time
they
gave right, and so yeah, they got all that speed. I mean, South Carolina got 20 on them, but that was with a field goal in overtime. And so you would think, all right, they've got the type of defense you need to be able to slow down LSU. The potential problem is that if you look closer at Georgia and who they've played. And there are a lot of different ways you look at numbers to tell you who the best passing team is. But the one that we have that we use with our advanced metrics, it's pass EPA per game, doesn't mean anything to most of the people listening to this, but just trust me on this.
I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah, the best passing offense that Georgia's faced this season is Florida.
Right.
Okay, and if you watch Florida, I mean, they're okay throwing the ball, but by our numbers on a per-game basis, what they generate from the passing game, LSU is more than double what Florida right. puts out. So this is a completely different animal than anything Georgia's faced. That doesn't mean that they can't handle it, but they just haven't seen anything like it. And, of course, the problem for Georgia is that they – I mentioned earlier, you know, struggles in the downfield passing game with Fromm and those receivers – two of those receivers are out for the first half. One is out for the whole game. Like his best receiver, transfer from Miami, Lawrence Cager, is out for the game with an injury.
That's right.
You probably saw the highlight last week of his next best receiver, George Pickens, getting a fight against Georgia Tech, and he's suspended for the first half. Swift is banged up. I just look they in conference games this year. Georgia's averaging 25 points per game, which is pretty pedestrian for a top 10
yes.
team. In college football these days.
Yeah.
And so even against an LSU defense that, look, they're not what LSU has been defensively in a lot of seasons, in most seasons, they're still better than a lot of defenses that Georgia's been struggling to hit 30 against. So I just don't see how Georgia gets enough points to be able to hang with LSU. I know there's a lot playoff-wise riding on this because if Georgia wins, it's going to eliminate the Utahs and the Oklahomas and Baylors and maybe even someone like Wisconsin that's holding on to a faint hope. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think LSU's just got too much for Georgia.
I think if the game is 10 possessions per side, I think Georgia's got a real chance. If this thing gets above 12 possessions, Georgia doesn't have enough
to handle. You're right. Because Georgia's offensive line, they have the talent individually that if they play as a unit the way that they're capable of, they could go on some long, time-consuming drives. You can run on that LSU defense.
Yes, you can.
And if they do that, they could frustrate LSU keeping the offense off the field, but that's how they would have to win it. You're right. It has to be minimizing possessions.
After a quarter and a half of the Big 12 championship game, Brad, will we know exactly what kind of Baylor team we're going to see? Is it going to be the Baylor team that played so well in the first half the first time, or the Baylor team that played so poorly the last quarter and a half? Will the first quarter and a half tell us that in this game?
That's an interesting way to ask it, considering how night and day the first half and second half were of the first meeting between these teams. But I think there is something to that, because not only had Oklahoma clearly figured something out in the second half and completely dominated Baylor, but two other things that have changed, and these are both very significant. Oklahoma's best receiver, you could argue their best player, C.D. Lamb, sat out that game with an injury. He didn't play at all, and he's back.
Yeah, we mentioned that a couple times this week.
Yeah, and so the other thing, though, is that the game was at Baylor. This one is on a so-called neutral field, but just, you know, it's Oklahoma, a big public school, versus Baylor, a small private school. That crowd's going to be 75% Oklahoma. So that's going to be very different as well. So everything is now shifted in Oklahoma's favor. If Baylor is doing a good job hanging in through a quarter and a half, I think they'll give them a good game. If you look at really the month of November, Oklahoma's offense was not what it was for the first 2 months of the season. True. And even, you know, even the non-Baylor games where they did have CeeDee Lamb, they just weren't torching people the way they were before. Some of that's because turnovers. Hurts was a little sloppy with the ball at times. But Baylor defensively is capable of keeping the score down. As much as you can keep it down against Oklahoma, they just got to get more out of their offense, especially more than they got in the second half of the first meeting.
On this particular day, who are the four best teams? And on Sunday, who might be the best four?
Four best teams. I don't think there's any question who the top three are. I would go with Utah.
Okay.
I mean, I think Utah is the most complete team out of the other ones. I mean, if you want to really get deep in the weeds with this, I think you could still make a great argument that Alabama is the fourth best team. But obviously, they don't deserve to be anywhere near the playoff with what they've done this year, and especially without Tua. But I think Utah is the most complete team out of the ones we see. The question is the level of competition. I think it's a fair question because they have yet to beat a team that's ranked in the top 25.
Right.
And that's why this Oregon game is so important. I mean, Oregon's not a great team, but they're a good team. And if Utah wins, and especially wins handily, I think we can put a lot of stock in these big margins by which they've been winning in conference play all season.
I believe Alabama hasn't either, Ed, did they?
Beat a ranked team?
Yeah, a team in the top 25, yeah.
No,
I mean, and by the way, talent wise, I agree with you. They're one of the four most talented teams in the country,
yeah.
So I agree with you completely. But it's interesting how that's played out. I know a lot of Penn State fans are going to have a real interest in what happens with Ohio State, Wisconsin, because that could open the door, obviously, possibly to Penn State and the Rose Bowls. Yeah.
So. Yeah, and you know what's crazy? Because I know as you were suffering through that game, I say suffering, obviously Penn State got back into it there in the second half. But it probably didn't feel very good watching what Ohio State offense was doing against the Penn State defense for most of that game. But as I was looking at the numbers this week, trying to figure out, okay, what could Wisconsin possibly do? The thing that jumped out at me is that Penn State defended Ohio State's run better than anyone has all season.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, they ran it so much. They had like 60 rushing attempts in the game. They ran it so much that they eventually just got big numbers out of sheer, you know, volume of attempts. But from an efficiency standpoint, Penn State did a pretty admirable job of slowing down their run. And that's the key to me as far as anyone beating Ohio State, whether it's this weekend or in the playoff, you've got to be able to take J.K. Dobbins out of the game.
Yeah.
You've got to be able to slow down that rushing attack, and no one's really been able to do it so far this year.
Yeah, as Jack Hamm and I were doing the game, I thought, look, Dobbins averaged 4.4 yards a carry in that game. Okay, now the 4.4 is good, but that's not Dobbin-esque. How about that?
Right.
The key was Fields' ability to either on a quarterback draw or to ad lib to keep drives alive. That's where the difference came. And I'll say this for Ohio State, Brad. Penn State gets to within four. The game's in the fourth quarter. Ohio State responds and scores. Then Penn State responds and is driving. And then Hilliard gets the big pick at the 20-yard line, which essentially ended the game. I thought Ohio State reacted very well when they had game pressure on them.
Yeah, I mean, you get that every year with certain teams that just dominate week after week, and you always ask the question, what's going to happen when they finally get pushed in the second half? And Ohio State answered the bell. And so, whether you're talking about that situation or what's going to happen when, you know, when Clemson finally plays someone in the playoff, I mean, some of these teams have shown that they're up to the challenge, and there are others that you still don't know. I think Utah tomorrow night, we still don't know for sure because Oregon is better than anyone they've played this year.
That's right. Brad, I know I could keep going and going and going because you're that good. I appreciate it. I know you stayed extra time with us, and the audience really appreciated it. Thanks so much.
Oh, I enjoy it. I enjoy it always. Thanks, Steve.
Brad Edwards, ESPN. He's on ESPN Radio Game Day, as a matter of fact. He's the host of it. We will come back. Our pick segment next on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Brewers Outlet.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC Way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC Way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC Way. The SMC Way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar. Led by the barrels of the Dills. Indeed, second to none. Hey, stock up now. Starting on Wednesday, it's going to get really cold again. You want to make sure you're fully stocked. Also, make sure you have something to take with you to a party. Also, make sure if people are coming over your place, you're stocked. And gift cards, the holidays gift cards, all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. We're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And James Franklin signs a new six-year contract with Penn State, approved by the Compensation Committee today. The six-year deal takes him through the 2025 season. Terms of the deal not yet released. And with that, now we allow Sean to bring in our leader in the clubhouse.
Our weekend tradition kickoff, unlike any other, Mr. Jones. Formerly number 78. In your Enfield, Connecticut high school football playbook, number one in our hearts, we bring in brand new homeowner, the one and only Kevin Jones.
What up? And new truck owner. Well, it's an old truck, but new to me. I bought a Dodge pickup truck, so now I got two pickup trucks. Well, I had to, but the orange plow pickup truck is in the orange plow pickup truck heaven.
So what was your nickname for the truck? Was that the Studio 305? What'd you nickname that? Your truck?
Probably the Orange Crush. I mean, an orange peel.
Well, if you lived near us, you would have.
You couldn't miss it in the snowstorm, put it that way. But
if you lived near us, you would have bought it at Sunbury Motors.
That's right.
That's right. It would have been nice. So, but the orange truck doesn't owe anyone a penny, and the little Dodge 1500. It's a powerhouse. I need something that if the snow is bad, I got a half hour commute now, and it's very hilly out by Yukon. So,
yeah.
I needed something that I felt safe in, and if anything happened to us out there, we could get out of there.
No more walking across the street. This is going to be
it's across a field. Across the street.
Well, you knew where I was getting at, so. But anyway.
Yeah. 100 yards away. Well, we'll still be here for 2 months, so we're renting now. I rent the building that the business is in from the same guy who bought the house, so.
There you go.
Well, the description you just told me on the new place, it sounds awesome.
Yeah, very, very pleased. Happy for my wife. She gets to, we downsized, so we got a good chunk of money for this property because she had 2 acres and downsized to a smaller home. So there's money for her to make her perfect little granite kitchen tops and all stuff she's never had. Pick out her cabinets and pick out her floors, and we don't have to do any demolition. It's just tearing up rugs and putting down floors, and we're going to let somebody else do it. We're not going to get involved, so we're going to live while we're involved heavily. You know, we'll spend a lot of Home Depots and Lowe's and going to cabinet places, but we've got a contractor who's going to take care of everything. Life in the fast lane. So what are you guys up to? Good news on Franklin. That's a great news.
I think it's something that absolutely had to happen. I mean, you cannot put a price on what he's done. I mean, he has stepped in. This is actually, in a lot of ways, in the 133 season history of Penn State football, been one of the historic runs. And the fact that the starting point for him with this run was something that was obviously they had to overcome. It was imposed by somebody else, but he brought them back out of it. And he'll be the first to tell you he had a lot of help doing it, but he brought them back out of it, and now to the point where they're a contender all the time. Well, I mean, that, you just can't put a price on that as to, you know, what that guy means. Just can't.
And I think as a competitor, that's what I admire the most, that he stayed. He wants to get over that little hump, you know, to win those big games that launch into that Final Four. So, and as a competitor, that's what you want. I'm going to get this school into that Final Four. So good for him. Admire him a lot. So where are they going on a bowl? You know yet?
No, I won't know until Sunday. Obviously, everything's going to really depend on tomorrow night's game between Ohio State and Wisconsin. If Ohio State were to win by about the same margin that they won the first time in Columbus, but to do it on a neutral field, if that were to happen, and I'm not saying it will, but if it were, I think Penn State's going to the Rose Bowl.
I hope so. If they don't, I'd love to see a situation they could play Alabama or Notre Dame, and I know that won't happen. But
I think the Citrus Bowl is pretty much locked in. Michigan playing Alabama. I think that one is pretty close to being locked in.
Well, that'll be a good game. Alabama's defense stinks. So, and that was my other thing this week. And Sean and I talked about it earlier in the week. I lost so much respect for Nick Saban last weekend. He was jumping up and down like a little girl on the sideline. Because, man, you have had your way in college football the past 10 years, you know? And then things don't go your way, and that's how you react. And then make a comment that was just a bogus... wasn't fair what the Auburn coach did.
Actually, to be honest with you, Nick Saban, that was embarrassing what happened there. And the reason it's embarrassing, he got outcoached because Auburn only made, on that play, Auburn made one substitution. One.
Yep.
They took out the wide receiver and they brought in the punter. And the punter, I want to say where's 90? Well, that makes the punter an eligible receiver. He's got an eligible receiving number. Well, that's all they did. And they lined up with Nixon the shotgun and the punt returner, who's a dynamic player, Waddell.
Yep.
Right?
Had a great
didn't get off the field. Right, but didn't get off the field. I mean, yeah. Nick's running out the full defense and the whole thing. My goodness. I mean, I realize you want to get the ball into the hands of Waddell. I got it. I know what you're trying to do. Right? But there are also certain moments where you have a situation called punt safe. Right? You have a situation called punt safe where one of your defensive backs can actually be back there and can field it. Penn State has that. John Reed is the punt safe guy. In other words, you've got a corner that's actually sitting back there that's a defensive player in case they fake it. And the bottom line is, what they did was unfair. No, what you did was unprepared.
Exactly.
You weren't ready.
I was so mad. I missed the game. But they played it so many times on ESPN, and the first time I saw it, I was like, wow, Saban got out-coached. It wasn't like it was a dirty play. It wasn't like a...
No.
Because on my phone, I heard read these, Saban says what a low blow. I'm paraphrasing. I don't know exactly what he said, but it was you don't do that at an end of the game of a big game like that. Why not?
Why not? Gus Malzahn. Gus Malzahn
knew it would work, and it worked.
Right.
And that's the way it goes. I mean, they'll say how many times in sports that the head coach is actually responsible for actually winning a game how many times. You know, they prepare all week, and it's a function of a team, and they go, but they'll interject something in a game how many times in a year that absolutely changed the game. And that guy did for Auburn, and good for them. And Saban was not prepared. Right. He was embarrassed. So.
What happened was they substituted one guy. One. Right? They took out a wideout. They brought in the punter. And by the way, it also doesn't mean, and I do not know this for a fact, it doesn't mean that Bo Nix, the quarterback, can't step back two more yards and then punt it himself.
Punt it. Yeah,
Now, for all I know, Bo Nix can't punt. I don't know. But I'm saying that that play still becomes an option. And the bottom line is Alabama's running guys on the field. They were disorganized.
Yeah, they had no idea what was going on. And Nix knew exactly what was going on. He was just walking forward, and he was just started clapping his hands. He knew we got him. And that was the play. To catch them. And that's a big game. You're right. They will do anything they have to do to win that game, and they did.
Well,
and they won.
How many times do you see Aaron Rodgers, and he's the master of it? Aaron Rodgers gets how many free plays a season because he catches defenses and changes? He does it all the time. Aaron Rodgers is cheating?
Yeah, no. The way that keeps the other team on their toes. It's like, you better make sure, because he's smart. He's going to pick up on it, and he's got a check. I'll just, again, paraphrase. Check hut, and the ball is hiked immediately. He'll check off whatever count they had and go right to a complete hut, and everybody seems to know what to do when he does it. So, like, don't move. So.
Right. By the way, one other note on James Franklin, by the way. We went off the number, but it's 6 years. Here's the other part, too, is the timing is really important. And we can't ever take timing out of this. But the early signing period begins in 12 days. And because it begins in 12 days, you wind up every school across the country needs to make sure that there's a clear message to recruits who's in charge.
Absolutely.
And the fact that they did that today was really important. So.
Get this one. UConn goes 2-10, right? I think they beat UMass and they beat a Division II team all year.
It's not good.
13 players have transferred out of the program. 9 of them are starters.
Yeah, get out there. Get recruiting. Bring some fresh guys
in. But you know what? If I'm UConn right now, and we're sitting in a conference room, I would seriously say to everybody, do you think maybe we ought to talk to Steve Addazio? Steve Addazio's out at Boston College.
Yep.
But has not an awesome track record, but he has a good track record. Not great, but good. And UConn's not going to get a great track record.
No.
Okay? You got to settle for good. And Addazio is a Connecticut guy. He grew up in Connecticut. So he understands the culture of the state. He grew up in the state. And if I were them, I'd take a long, hard look. Maybe he doesn't want the job. I don't know. But they ought to take a long, hard look at Steve.
Steve. The guy who built the program up and built it is Randy Edsall. And the guy who destroyed the program is Randy Edsall.
Right.
And he put a black mark on that program and on himself that he can't erase and he can't recruit. And I mean, the attendance is just pitiful. Right? I mean, and when the attendance is like 5,000 people a game, it's in a 40,000 seat stadium.
Yeah.
How do you recruit? You know, if you're a recruit, you're like, do I want to come here? You know, I am going to live a mile from their. I'm 3/4 mile from Gamble Pavilion. They could have built a stadium there, and they wouldn't do it.
Of course they could have.
Land than Penn State has. It's all farmland. It's a beautiful, beautiful campus, beautiful area, but they opted not to, and they put a put the stadium 45 minutes away. And
yeah, that's smart.
You can't do that. How do you recruit? How do you recruit against Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State and these schools that, you know, they build their life around the football stadium? UConn didn't, and they were right there. They had it. They could have had. They had some good football players go through there.
We need to get to some picks, though.
Yeah, we got about 5 minutes.
God.
Yeah.
Sorry.
No, it's been great.
I'm sitting here in Columbus right now. I got a better handle on the time than two of you do. Come on. Go.
I'll shut up.
All right. So the both of you are tied. You're at the top, 63-38, and I am 59-42, four behind. I gained a little bit of ground last week, going 5-2 last week. Steve, you went 4-3, and King a little stumble, 3-4. But
no, I got a little risky there. But
yeah, I was risky 2 weeks ago. So, but yep, you guys are even, 63-38. As we jump into week 16, we'll go in chronological order for the college conference championship game. So we'll lead off with tonight's matchup in the Pac-12: Utah and Oregon.
Utah by 2 touchdowns.
Wow. Okay, I'm going to take Oregon. I'm going to go with the upset.
I think Utah's defense is so good.
Yeah,
I've got also have Utah.
Okay. All right. High noon tomorrow in Jerry World. You got the Pac-12. The Big 12 championship game between Oklahoma and Baylor.
It's going to feel like a home game to Oklahoma. Remember, Baylor does not have a large student body. They don't. And so after playing in Waco, they're going to play in Arlington. Oklahoma's going to win this game. I think they're going to win it by 17, maybe 20 points.
I'm also going to take Oklahoma.
I took Oklahoma also.
Okay. SEC Championship game Saturday, 4 p.m., CBS, LSU, and Georgia.
I think LSU will win, but I think it's going to be a little tighter, maybe 10 points in this one. That's one thing about Georgia. Offensively, they are very stoic and staid, but defensively, they're really, really good. I think they'll be the first team to slow down LSU this year.
I've also got the Tigers.
Yeah, I took LSU. Love the quarterback. Going to win the Heisman Trophy. Okay.
Primetime tomorrow night, Indianapolis. Big Ten championship game, Ohio State and Wisconsin.
Ohio State will win, and they'll win by a margin. Wisconsin is under the category of the last thing they need is to be one-dimensional. Jonathan Taylor has had two of his worst three games statistically against Ohio State in his career. Normally, Taylor gets first contact about 5 to 6 yards downfield. When they played the first time, the first contact was about a half yard statistically downfield, and that's not his game. Jack Cohn can't win it for them.
Buckeyes get the check for me.
Yeah, I took Ohio State also. They really impressed me against Michigan. That's when I really, really had a lot of respect for Penn State after watching what Ohio State did to Michigan, because Penn State gave Ohio State everything they wanted. So Ohio State, arguably, love to see him play LSU.
Again, I think the number one seed means something this time, because you don't want Clemson in the semifinal. That's why I think you want to make sure you make a convincing argument at the end tomorrow night that you're the one seed.
Right.
All right, on to the pros for Sunday. 49ers at the Saints.
The 49ers played a great game against Baltimore. But I'll take New Orleans, because I think it's tough to be in two physical games back-to-back like that.
And it's in New Orleans as well. So I've also got the Saints.
I love San Francisco. I'm taking San Francisco.
Good. Hey. No, good pick. Yeah. Good pick.
Okay, Chiefs at the New England Patriots. Did the Patriots sign a kicker today? Do we hear anything on that? At last check, they didn't. So,
how about a wide receiver or a running back?
I'm going to pick offensive line. I'm going to pick Kansas City. I'm picking Kansas City.
Me too, Chiefs. Yes.
I got KC.
Okay, Revis KC. And NFC West matchup, the Seahawks and the Rams.
Seattle.
Seattle, and I'm going to mix this up a little bit because we've got so many of the same. I'll take Baylor.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, Baylor was winning 31-10 at home. All right. Good. That could be a good pick. I mean, you know, Matt Rhule grew up in State College, buddy.
Let's go for it. Go Baylor. Go Waco. Go Chip and Joanna.
I did two games in Waco. It felt like 2 months. All right. We'll talk to you Monday.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.